Germany activates its emergency gas plan as Russia's war in Ukraine rages on. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Germany's economy minister Robert Habeck said today gas supplies from Russia are secure for now, but his country has to be prepared for possible Russian escalation in Ukraine. Mr. Habeck urged businesses and households to reduce energy consumption as much as possible, while a crisis team activated the first stage of the country's emergency plan to prepare for any disruption. This all comes after G7 nations, which include Germany, rejected a plan from Moscow requiring payments for energy supplies to be made in rubles. It's a move that would have helped prop up the Russian currency, which has been hit by the war. Laurent Rusekis is executive director of gas in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa at S&P Global. He told me how significant today's move from Germany is.
At this point, it's a game of chicken. I think the next step probably is for this to get calmed down a little bit. Between the political discussions, we can also have contract discussions, because at some point Gazprom will contact, it has about 30 buyers in Europe that it has long-term contracts with, and begin discussing that. And then you could see this going on for a while, as opposed to an immediate resolution, if we get into some sort of rather dull contract negotiations between Gazprom and its buyers.
Not for nothing, though, Russia does supply Germany with almost 50% of its gas needs, and Germany this morning did warn that there could be significant disruption for consumers. What are its other immediate options for supplies, if not for Russia, and how quickly could it sort of turn one tap off and turn another on?
Well, you're right, obviously, about Germany and its particular reliance on Russian gas, but I think this would be handled and managed at the EU level. In case of a full cutoff of Russian gas, you would see sort of emergency plans kick in. Some of it would be running coal plants, much more than they're running today. In the longer term, obviously, more renewables would help, but you can't do that quickly. You would import as much LNG as possible. That can happen to quite high levels, but that can't replace all Russian gas. And then ultimately, you're going to have to constrain demand. And I think the focus there would be to ration gas for industrial use so that household consumers would have continuing flow of gas.
Laurent Rusekis from S&P Global, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, European gas prices are up about 17% this morning off the back of that announcement from Germany. Checking some other numbers now, Russia's ruble is on the rise again, back near the level it was trading before the country launched its war in Ukraine. Elsewhere, global stock benchmarks are mixed as investors weigh the economic impact of war against developments this week in peace talks. The Ukrainian military says it's observing Russian forces pulling back from positions around Kyiv a day after Russia said it would de-escalate some fighting. After almost 5 weeks of war, Moscow has said it's trying to build trust. The BBC has learned, though, Syrian fighters are being offered $7,000 a month to fight on the front line for Russia. One volunteer said he knew of at least 200 people who have accepted that offer. The BBC's Amir Nader has that story.
The Syrian soldier who spoke to the BBC said he believed Russia was carrying out a massacre in Ukraine, but it was also helping poor Syrians who couldn't afford to eat. He had volunteered because of the money on offer. He told us people were offered contracts for the equivalent of $7,000 to fight, or half of that to provide security. His family doesn't want him to go, but he was told that they would be paid $50,000 if he was killed. He knew of at least 200 people who had volunteered, most of whom were doing it for the money and not for ideological reasons. The Ukrainian government and a leading Syrian NGO say 14 recruitment centres have been set up across Syria. We spoke to one recruiter who told us the process was the same as the recruitment to fight for Russia in Libya, and no one was being forced to go. Successful recruits are being trained at the Hemamim base in Syria and then flown to Russia. The recruit we spoke to said he didn't know when he would be going, but added, it's likely 90% will die.
That's the BBC's Amir Nader reporting there. As we've talked a lot on this program about, Russia's war in Ukraine is making an already bad inflation problem worse. Today, fresh data showed consumer prices in Spain jumped nearly 10% last month from a year ago. That's a much faster pace than economists expected. In many countries, the price of everyday staples are rising. The BBC's Dan O'Brien explains rising costs for farmers is making it more expensive for families here in the UK to put food on their tables.
110 years ago, Kerry Cryer's great-grandfather started farming this land in North Wiltshire. She started Brinkworth Dairy here in 2005, but has never seen costs like those she's facing now.
Our cow feed costs have doubled, electricity prices have tripled, and fertiliser costs have quadrupled. On top of that, There's also huge delays in the supply chain when you need to order something. I think that farmers over the country will be choosing to reduce yields so they can reduce input costs, or maybe even stopping farming. This is going to lead to food shortages and potentially customer food price increases.
Part of the issue is Ukraine is a massive producer of grains, including those used in animal feed. But while it's tricky for dairy farmers, it's tougher for others. Arable farmers with limited supplies of the natural fertiliser rely on buying in the manufactured sort, for which we are hugely reliant on Russia. Rob Vines was born on Crofton Farm near Marlborough. He grows maize and rye and rears some livestock here.
How do you think you're going to get through this coming year, this next couple of years?
I'm not sure I can. I mean, something's got to change. I don't earn enough to take up the 15... £1,000 more diesel I'm going to have to pay. I definitely don't have a spare £80,000 sat anywhere to buy the fertiliser I need for next year. If I bought the fertiliser and had the diesel, there's no guarantee that the corn price is going to go up to £500 a tonne to make my money back.
What, if anything, can the government do about it, though? George Eustace is the Secretary of State for Farming. Instead of relying on imports, he wants to increase production of UK-made fertiliser by making better use of the network of specialist plants which convert food waste into gas and fertiliser.
We have no shortage of organic matter, both from slurry or farm milk manure on farms or digestate from AD plants. There's enough of that organic material to displace all of the manufactured fertilisers that we use in this country. And there's been quite a growth in the technology to convert some of those that can be spread on the soil just the way that manufactured fertilisers are.
But it won't stop a sharp rise in food bills. Industry leaders warn that farmers are facing costs like never before and consumers will have to pay more. In the county of Wiltshire, England, I'm the BBC's Dan O'Brien for Marketplace.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.